You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD. This week we have with us the two Chrises, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely. Nicole's out this week. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
This week, it is fanboy versus religion, theism, bleeding cool.
It's more like JD versus.
JD versus, yeah. Those things.
JD versus the volcano.
Yeah. Oh, if only. Maybe. That was actually a good movie. I like that movie. pop culture. Da, 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 da. Anyway, so.
20 years old.
Yay, somebody might have
said that. We're relevant.
Yay. So I'll talk about that in a minute, if you haven't heard. Actually, it's a funny thing, but it's a weird thing. So, comics happened this week. Boy, first week back, and it's like, yeah. I was ready for this, like, killer week of comics. It's usually, like, my first week of the month, like. Yeah. Dominates me, and they like hand me two books, and I was like, oh, well, okay.
I'll tell you what that is. I didn't realize it at the time, but what I realized what happened is that there's five Wednesdays in January, so basically what DC did was they took all the stuff that would have been out on the last week of December, and rather than move it up the way Marvel did with all their stuff, they pushed it forward into the first week of January.
Ah.
Which is why we don't have Action Comics that's the only thing I can think of that comes out in the first week.
The important
that's
thing.
Why we don't have Action Comics.
That's the important thing that we don't have.
Is this the last issue of Action that's coming?
No, there's one more after this. There's one more after it.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Action's not ending, though. I mean,
it's the last issue of Action Comics.
It's the last issue we care about.
Last one, I'll be back.
Let's see, for the majority of the people that listen that are on this podcast, it is the last issue.
Right, yeah, I know. It's like,
probably keep getting it. I don't know why, but I'd say the rest of you will not.
I'm going to be like, okay, and I need to take that off my list.
Yeah. Quarter 17 is a supersized finale. It's like $5 or something. There's a lot of, there's it's big.
Oh, awesome. Well, that's good. I'm excited. I mean, I'm sad, but I'm excited. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's nice. It's cool. So, what news then? What news then, sir, do we have?
There's really nothing happening this week at all. Really just like the only thing that's caught my attention or being worthy of having attention drawn to it is the continued progress of Peter David, who, as we discovered live on the show last week, suffered a stroke while he was on holiday over the Christmas period. The reports are good. He is responding to physical therapy and is actually even revising some X Factor scripts. But, you know, he is... we discussed all the symptoms last week. You know, his ability to walk was hampered, and the one side of his body. But he's undergoing therapy, and he is responding to it. So it's a slow progress, but it is good. It's just a terrible shame, and it's just goes to show you like one of those things that you really think this can happen to anyone, anywhere, at any time. It's scary. But go out and buy his books. If you want to help support.
Oh, heck yeah.
I'm glad he's progressing. Yeah, I really like Peter David. I haven't bought X Factor in, like, forever. But, dude, he's one of my favorite writers. He is.
His wife recommends buying his books from Crazy 8 Press or Amazon or Barnes & Noble websites because he gets the most money from them and most directly through those routes. So
sweet.
Pair him up with that.
Good deal. Awesome.
That's about the height of it, as far as news goes.
That's going to be a slow. I mean, that's going to be a slow process. That's one of the things, you know, we talk about. We live in kind of this modern, fast-paced world, and you know, this is going to be a long recovery process. It's going to be, you know, drawn out. So we'll definitely, hopefully, you know, check in and keep an eye on how he's doing, because we're definitely, you know, obviously, I think we're fans of stuff that he's done. So hang in there, sir. Any other news?
I have spotted nothing.
Nothing.
I have seen nothing at all going on.
So
I'm glancing my eyes over things quickly here to see if anything.
That's great. That okay. Firefly is going to be on Arrow. Yeah, oh, that's yeah. not going to make it. That's not really news.
It's not really going to make the cut.
No, no. Yeah. That's not high quality. Not the kind of high quality news that we're used to on the show. Speaking of high quality news, not really. It's kind of an odd thing happened. Okay, good. And he, okay, good. Actually, that's a nice little update there. All right, so here's a thing that happened Friday. Now, everybody, I work a day job, right? This is not podcasting and comics and shit is not my life. But it was coming. But it was near the end of the day. I mean, unlike Christopher Feely, who gets to like work at a comic shop, which is awesome. I should do that. Not awesome. I like the fingers. Where it's like, yeah.
You should open the best comic shop in Oklahoma. You should totally do that.
It's already open. It's called New World Comics. It's on 63rd in Meridian. And. so I'm like, it was like a little bit before I left, was leaving work, and I see a tweet from Bleeding Cool come across, and it piqued my interest because it was this title about, is it silly for Beast to be an atheist? And, you know, that kind of crosses over, you know, my worlds of both atheism and comic books, and so I check it out, and it's just a brief little editorial, from Bleeding Cool, from, Rich Johnson on, the... You know, making the argument that if, you know, for Beast to be an atheist seems a little funny because he lives in this world with all this crazy, amazing stuff. And, you know, he's on teams with gods. So he can't really be an atheist. And I kind of mentally came up with a rebuttal or two. And I actually almost, like, tweeted one. And I thought, you know, this is just not worth it. Because I do that all the time. I'm just like, this is just not worth getting into like a whole thing on. I was like, not going to post it or whatever. And one of the reasons it also caught me is because William West, who, if you don't know who he is, awesome guy, self-proclaimed guru of pop culture. A lot of fun to follow on Twitter. But I saw him make a comment about it. And so him and I got into a discussion about it. Well, Rich pops into our discussion and like makes a comment or two. And basically it ended up where I said, look, I could explain why, you know, what you're saying isn't necessarily the case, but it would take too long. How about I send you an essay? 'Cause I was on my way home. And before I know it, I have now written out this like huge long post and like sent it to him, which has ended up being posted on Bleeding Cool, so you can read it there. I tweeted awesome. A link to it. Yeah, kind of weird. I'll tweet a link, I guess, through the Fanboy Versus Twitter. Unless one of you guys want to do that at the moment, you can if you want.
I don't actually have the login for that.
Oh, that's right, you don't. No one does anymore, I guess. I need to change the login. Anyway, that's not boring. That's boring. So anyway, I'll post a link on that through the Fanboy Versus Twitter if you want to check that out. But it's very boring and uninteresting and basically just makes a case for why Beast could be an atheist, even in the strange, fantastic world that he lives in. So, I don't know. I don't know. What do you guys think? It's kind of an odd topic for our show, but I guess I could ask it nonetheless.
No, I've never found that particularly odd. I mean, even within the rules the Marvel Universe plays with, things are so malleable anyway. Once upon a time, you know, these gods and things were hardly ever treated as if they were anything more than aliens who sometimes came down to Earth. And then comparatively, you have something as recent as Jason Aaron's Thor, which is doing Thor with worshippers and pantheons and all sorts of stuff that adds extra meaning to it, you know. But just the idea that somebody would... maybe refuse is the wrong word, but just not see the divinity in that,
mm-hmm.
or just as the way they understand the world. It's never struck me as particularly odd. I think DC has a fairly visible character like that in Mr. Terrific.
Yeah, and oddly enough, that was Williams' parallel, too, because he made that comment about... I mean, because I think... Is it in Infinite Crisis that Mr. Terrific makes that comment about, like, he's standing there with someone else, and they have, like, a real brief conversation where they're saying, it's like, how can you be an atheist when you live with all this stuff? And he's like, well, it's all explainable or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, and that's kind of the approach that I took, like, in my rebuttal to it, which was basically that, you know... There's a lot of things that are part of our natural world that at one time may have been considered divinely controlled that we now understand. And so I don't think it seems out of the realm of someone who's really smart, you know, to think that even things that are fantastic are still part of that natural world. And it's a different world. I mean, the Marvel Universe is filled with stuff that would be insane in our world, but are commonplace in that world, you know. People in the Marvel Universe can control metal with their minds, you know, and that's part of that natural world, not supernatural.
I mean, even in the Marvel Universe, you know, you got a big red guy who lives in hell and collects people's souls, but it's all done in a way that presents hell as another dimension, mm-hmm. and he's a resident of that realm, and he trades in the life energy of people that he... And so, you know...
Yes, exactly.
I mean, ever since they started putting this stuff down in handbooks, there's been a sort of quantification of the way this... And of course, these things are not always adhered to rigidly or anything, but there's a kind of a way the world works that can essentially appease both camps.
Yes.
Yeah, if one chooses to break it down into logical and into the numbers, you know, there is a certain rationale for it. But then at the same time, like there are also there's quote unquote magic, but that's just treated as a by and large. You know, I think DC's a little bit more inclined towards treating it that way as a form of energy that man simply has not scientifically quantified as of yet.
Yeah, yeah, and
recently the Fantastic Four run by Mark Waid, you know, Reed Richards is like just and science is just and magic is just science I haven't learned yet. You know?
Well, and I think I mentioned in there, I mean, it kind of goes back to like the Arthur C. Clarke, you know, comment about advanced alien technology would be indistinguishable from magic, you know, and. You know, a lot of things come back to that idea, I think, in particular within modern comics. And maybe that's a whole, like, other discussion to have, like, about, you know, how some of the more metaphysical things within comics have been brought down to this sort of solid scientific, you know, way of explaining things that we've almost done away with that, like, mystical element of things where it's like things have become, oh, these are all natural things. They're just not, you know, things that are there's nothing truly mystical in it. Yeah.
In the Silver Age, like, any character could come up against something magical and it would just be like, yeah, magic, that's weird. Yeah. It's like, I always think one of the great examples that always comes to mind for me is when Doctor Doom appears in for the first time in Fantastic Four #5 and is like, yes, with my time machine and my electro net and my magnificent spaceship, I'm going to send you back in time to steal me Merlin's magic gems. And it's like... Okay, whatever, you know. It's,
yeah.
It's these two worlds, the characters. And that's, it's like, it's magic, whatever.
Well, and that's what's so great about Doctor Doom, though, is that he is one of those characters that isn't distinctly in, like, one world or the other, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know if other writers, or even Lee and Kirby themselves, just sort of decided to build that up out of the rather insane... juxtaposed from that very first issue, because I don't like reading the first issue. I don't believe it's like intended to be like, oh, he does science, but he do magic too. It's just that Silver Age-y attitude where it's like, yeah, magic gems. That's it. That's just a thing. They're unapologetic about the fact that they're okay to just say magic. I always think one of those Brave and the Bold, actually, the cartoon Batman Brave and the Bold was probably the most recent example of a comic book. Piece of comic book media or even a comic book itself just sort of embracing that and just going with it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? It's the, I don't remember what the episode is. It's got Gorilla. I think it's a very early one, and it's got Gorilla Grodd in it, you know, and he hypnotizes Batman, but then Batman gets free, and then later in the episode, Grodd tries to hypnotize him again, and it's like, won't work this time, Grodd. I'm using a technique taught me by a Tibetan master to block your mind control. Like, just like off the cuff, just like that. Yeah. They don't care. No. It's all mind voodoo.
Yeah. But it does seem like, I think it is on those elements where we find that, but I think in more, like, the mainstream comic, it is like that, has sort of been lost. Like, we don't, I mean, not completely, it is still there, but within the outline of that, there's still the bits, it's like, well, yeah, it's magic, but it's not really magic, because it's really, you know, something else that we can control. So, you know, that's, you know, part of nature or part of what is natural. So, interesting. Anyway, if you want to, go to Bleeding Cool, check it out. Make sure you read the original article. It was posted on either early Friday or Thursday. So it was the 4th, I think, is when that was posted. And then you can read my follow-up rebuttal, too. I thought it was nice of him to at least post the rebuttal, you know, given that you kind of, you know, you're prone to post an opinion piece and then, you know, someone offers to post a rebuttal to that, and they did. So, very cool. Anyway. All right, enough self-promotion. We'll move on then to I guess, comics. We'll just read it then. We're done with news then. That's it.
Yeah, I got so, nothing.
Yeah. I have enjoyed some of the stuff that was going around this past week, just to mention social media, that there's been all of this talk about the Gail Simone, that Gail Simone is replacing on Batgirl.
She'll never be as good as her.
Yeah, the Gail Simone that's replacing Gail Simone on Batgirl may not be as good as the Gail Simone that's being replaced. Check that out. So anyway,
I would absolutely love it if she like wrote Batgirl like dark and gritty or something.
like
totally. A different, just do like a totally different take on the character, like just like it is, like a new creative team.
Yeah,
like I'm sure it's pretty gritty as it is.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, do something completely different. I mean, I don't know.
Make like, it
fun. Now she's carrying exactly. a gun. Now she's carrying a gun and a sword or something. You're going crazy with it.
What if, right? What if she was in a wheelchair and fought crime using computers?
Oh, man.
But she's.
That would be great.
Yeah.
I would buy that book.
Some kind of dumb shit to get rid of an awesome idea like that.
Yeah. Because you've got all angles. You've got a female, you've got a disability, but overcoming that disability, and she's smart because she's using computers. You know?
But does the wheelchair shoot like batarangs or something? Because I'm hoping for batarangs.
Yeah, it's got to have a batarang launcher or something in it. It's got to have rocket boosters.
Spinning bat-shaped rims.
Okay, well, as long as she wears a high neck collar or just a neck ring, that's really important.
Yeah.
You got to have the V.
There will be ribbing on her trousers.
Right, yeah. Yeah. It's got to have detailed lines. Oh, God. Okay, anyway. I laugh because if I did not, I would cry. All right, Chris Triplett, what do you have for us this week?
I decided to get something different because, I never pick up anything new, and it's good to pick up something new every once in a while. You know, it gives you perspective. You know, you try things. It's like, you know, I never ate like something before. I'm going to try something different. Well, you know, it's like comics. It's a new comic, except for it's kind of not new.
You've never tried chocolate covered grasshoppers before? Give them a try.
Exactly. So, like, you know, it's kind of not new because it's Morbius the Living Vampire number one, and I kind of know what Morbius is because I like Spider-Man. But I thought, hey, I'll
really going outside your box there, Triplett. I like that. It's really left field, you know, to buy a Spider-Man related comic.
He's trying.
I'm trying, okay? I mean, like,
I switched to a new smell of Tide.
Unless you count flashbacks, Spider-Man doesn't appear in this comic at all.
Oh, wow. So, so he's only in half of the book as flashbacks. Nice.
But, I mean, like, it's a book that, like, I just don't understand why Morbius is getting an ongoing monthly. It just, to me, just doesn't make sense. So I wanted to try that just to see, okay, does this concept have legs? And, I mean, it's a fine book. I mean, like, it's written okay, and it doesn't really do a whole lot of setup for, like, you know, like a supporting cast. I don't know if that's something they're going with in this book or not. But, like, from reading it, I just can't get anything to tell me why he needs his own book. Why is this not a miniseries, you know? Or why is this not, you know, like, just like a one-shot or something? Like, because, honestly, if it didn't have a cliffhanger ending, which, you know, it has a cliffhanger ending, technically, I would say it has a cliffhanger beginning because it's one of those books. Whoa. It happens at the beginning. And then it backtracks, and then it says, okay, this is how we got to this point. Cliffhanger, go get issue number two, which, you know, I'm probably not going to get issue number two, so I'm just right now. I mean,
well, we see the going out on the limb really lasted, didn't it?
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, it's not a bad book. The art's, you know, pretty good, and it's just that nothing really stands out about it. I mean, it literally takes place, like, right after the end of Amazing Spidey 699.1, where he escapes from the prison. And it kind of, like, sets up that he's still in New York, and for some reason he doesn't want to get out of New York. He says he's got unfinished business, but it never really gets into what that unfinished business
is. And miles to go before he sleeps. Yeah. And miles to go before he sleeps.
So is this just this is another Captain Marvel, then, where we've got a first issue on our hands that doesn't give us a statement for what this is actually going to be about?
I mean, it pretty much, like, it sets up stuff. Like, he shows up and don't laugh when I say this, but, like,
oh boy, you're laughing.
You gotta preface it with that, okay.
Basically, what's going on is he's helping homeless people.
Like,
don't laugh, okay?
Is he helping them?
I would like to have you for dinner.
Yes.
No, I mean over for dinner.
I need your plasma.
Does he at any point hunger for plasma?
No. So, like, he's basically living in, like, a, you know, like a homeless area of New York or something. And there's street gangs that are giving them problems, and he gets involved when he shouldn't get involved. And it's that type of a story. And I don't know.
That is odd. That is, like, that is odd.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's not what I was expecting. I mean, because basically that's like the Spawn story.
Yeah,
that's, like, hey,
that's exactly what that is.
I'm hanging out with a bunch of homeless people, and, you know, they're characterized as, you know, decent people, and bad things are happening to them, and I'm just kind of using these powers to help them, and that's basically what it is. I mean, it starts off kind of interesting because it takes kind of a neat slant on it where it says, like, the first words it says is, I was a living vampire. And then it goes into start explaining, like, what he's talking about. And he says advantages of being vampirish. He doesn't say he's a vampire. He just says
he's vampirish.
So he said, you know, being able to.
Now, that's what I was thinking. I'm vampirish.
It's not a vampire. He's just
plasma.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you say that more clearly? I need to turn that into a ringtone.
Oh, I hunger for your plasma.
Oh, God, yes. Oh.
I would have said that in this, but he didn't.
Turning that into a ringtone.
If you had a point to Guinness about you, I'd take that also. Oh, I'm vampire-ish, son. You know, I'm like legitimately vampirish, like from Vampireland. I'm not like all those New Yorkers who just pretend to be vampirish on St. Patrick's Day.
No, clever vampire pun for St. Patrick's Day. Come on.
Oh, man. Hold on to that.
St. Draki's Day. I don't know. It's not coming. Okay. Moving on.
Look, even starts off with him saying, I'm not a vampire, I'm not a supervillain, I'm not a superhero. And, like, it in, you know, the beginning of it says, my name is Michael Morbius, I was a living vampire, now I'm a dead man. And that's the cliffhanger, like, something.
Oh,
Morbius is dead!
Oh!
You know?
Is that the cliffhanger where you just left hanging? Does he mean I'm a dead man and like someone's coming to get him, or does he mean I'm a dead man in like after 40 years, Morbius is finally just a real vampire?
No, he gets shot in the chest with a shotgun, and he's gonna die. He makes the point known that like, oh, there's all this stuff that, you know, like the myths of like a vampire and all this stuff. You know, he's like, I can't change into anything. No mist, no bats or anything. Crosses don't faze me. I find garlic delicious, particularly in a nice pesto sauce. However, while sharp stakes to the chest will kill me like they will anyone else, lots of other things will kill me too. And that's where the gunshot gets him in the chest. Because he's not feeding off of anyone. He's, you know, trying not to drink blood. He's trying to survive without it. And he's weak. So, of course, you know, these guys, you know, are able to take him down pretty quick.
So he's going to kill them. Okay.
But it's just that, like, yeah, I mean, like, that's pretty much it. It's like he's hanging out with some homeless people in New York, and the gangs are, like, giving him problems, and he steps in, and he's like, I'm not a hero, but he's like, he still gets involved. And that's kind of it. And unless something happens in the next issue or two, I don't get why this is an ongoing series. I just don't. I mean,
because
like, if
Marvel doesn't have vampires. And they need a vampire book.
It's not a bit lit to the table in that case.
It's not a character where it wouldn't really be... I'm not saying it wouldn't really be a bad thing to make an ongoing series. It's just it's a weird choice. You know, like, he's a character where you could really explore. Like, maybe you could explore him looking for a cure, like he was doing in Amazing Spider-Man. Or maybe he's going to try to redeem himself for some of the crap that he did or something. But I'm not seeing either direction in the book right now, so... It's not a bad book. It's just that I'm just not getting it. I'm not getting the point of why it exists.
That's the main question we really had about the book when we saw the promotion for it. It was like, with all of the stuff that's launching out of Marvel now, like, all really high profile. Again, Marvel's past year, Marvel has really been reconsolidating their books down to represent many core franchises. And with so many different adjectives placed in front of Avengers and X-Men and Spider-Man, and into the midst of all this, out of nowhere, strides a Morbius book. Everybody's reaction is, why? And you're saying that this issue essentially hasn't answered the why.
It really hasn't. I mean, it doesn't give me a direction where it's going. Like, I liked what they were doing with Morbius and Amazing Spidey. I liked how you didn't know that he was, you know, the guy that was in the room, and then you found out, and then, like, people still didn't really know, but we knew as readers that it was Morbius that was in there, and I liked that, and then when that ended, It's like, where does he go from here? And like, well, he goes into his own book is where he goes, and I'm, like, thinking, why? You know?
I can't remember. Did he get alienated from the Legion of Monsters or something?
I don't know. I never
Nicole and I were the only ones who read that miniseries,
I read the Marvel Zombies that he was in, like, you know, when they did the Fred Van Lente books where he was.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
That stuff was pretty good, but like beyond that, you know, I had no idea what Morbius was doing up until the point that he showed up in Amazing Spidey. I was like, yeah, he's probably out there somewhere. I don't know what he's doing, but haven't seen him in a while. But, I mean, like I said, it's not a bad book. It's just that I just wish that it had something in it to make me want to go and get the next issue other than, oh, he might be dead. He's a vampire. What do you mean he might be dead?
Wow.
Yeah.
What difference is it going to make?
Yeah.
Well, and obviously he can't die. He's got an ongoing book. So, yeah. You know,
yeah, my name is Michael Morbius. I'm not a superhero. I'm not a supervillain. I'm the reason to buy this. So, goodbye, readers. The stuff this book is not going to be. Well, we're simultaneously not going to tell you what it is either.
Ugh. Wow.
Yeah. Now, he's not real. Since he's not really a vampire, he can't turn anybody into something, right? He's never been able to do that, right?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I was thinking, like, you know, maybe that's a direction that could go with it. Like, maybe he, like, turns somebody
Make him
something.
Into a full vampire. Make him sparkly.
Maybe that's the direction they're going with it. Maybe he dies, and then when he dies, he becomes Morbius the undead.
The unliving vampire. Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah, that's Morbius.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. So, okay, I've got two books I'm going to talk about real quickly because neither is, like, interesting enough to even fill a five-minute, like, time slot. I don't even know. Anyway, first up is Iron Man. Oh, God, I cannot tell you how glad I am that this damned Extremis arc is over. Are you with me? Are you with me? Like, holy hell.
It hasn't been bad. It's just been... It's been directionless.
It really has. I mean, you can tell...
It has been 5 one-shot stories.
I mean, you can tell that this is totally something that they said, all right, Karen, so your first arc on Iron Man, we've got a movie coming out, so it's got to be Extremis. And you're like...
But what? I was going to do an arc that dealt with the fallout of AVX, where he questioned faith and dealt with the whole business of killing the Phoenix. You can do that
second.
Get the Extremis out of the way first.
Yeah, get that done first. And, oh, God, this has so been that. And this is like the last chapter. This is like the end of this, and it is so mailed in. Oh, man, it is like, it is on stationery, like, and says, just like, love, Kieran. And then, like... folded up and stamped and, like, sent out. It is so mailed in.
This issue is not even really about the final Extremis Enhancile that he's going to hunt down.
Yeah.
This is about primarily providing the justification for him to head off into space to go and be a Guardian of the Galaxy for a month.
Yeah. So that is a thing that's going to happen. And he's got this nifty new armor for a minute.
My God. Wait, which nifty new armor?
So
you're saying this is issue 5 and they still don't have you as...
This is,
down with the book, pretty much. You're, it's like...
Yeah. I mean, I'm not... I am, because it's like... It's one of those things where it's like, I know he can write good stuff, and I know it's coming.
Yes,
I just have to get through this Extremis stuff and the teeth, and then I can get there. There are so many.
I'm giving it the second arc, you know, but it's got to pull its socks up for this God Killer arc, or I'm out.
Yeah, because man.
And I feel bad about that because, like I said, voted for him as best writer of the year last week for the strength of his Journey into Mystery work alone. His Uncanny X-Men's been great too, but he even admits himself on the letters page of, I forget which issue it was, but it was, there have been 5 issues of Iron Man already in 2 months. What the fuck?
Really.
It's a no. That's like,
because like yelling on Iron Man just sounds awesome. It just
doesn't.
Like,
it?
I haven't.
It
Iron
does.
Years, and it was like the one thing. It's like, yeah, I'm getting Iron Man again, and I'm excited to get Iron Man. And it's been okay, I guess.
Yeah. He says himself on one of the letters pages that it's not like his X-Men or his Journey into Mystery in that it's not. He doesn't have an arc mapped out. He doesn't know where he's going with it. He is just along for the ride. He's not here to write an Iron Man story. He's here to write some Iron Man stories.
Yeah, and that's...
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I was discussing this with somebody earlier this week, and I was like, I don't like being a guy who gets a little antsy about a comic when it doesn't have a direction or a goal or a purpose. You know, I'm okay with it just being stories. You know, comics can just be short and medium-term stories. There doesn't have to be some long-term goal in mind for comics. But... I think I need a little more out of my short and medium-term stories than this.
Here's my problem, and here's my concern with it, which is that if there's not a really strong direction and purpose, Greg Land's art is not strong enough to carry story. I mean, you know, these are a series of snapshots out of a film, but you get no action, no punch, there's no kind of oomph to this.
So you've not really seen a lot of Greg Land before.
I'm not
being funny. Like,
no,
being,
I mean, no,
not
I've
really
not.
Read anything he's done.
No,
I've suffered through a couple of series.
I have thankfully avoided it, but yeah, I mean, with the complete inability to, you know, draw a story, then yeah, I mean, it's just it really doesn't leave a lot for the reader.
He was doing hard on Uncanny X-Men when Gillen was doing it, and it didn't bother me that bad. It really didn't. I thought it was fine.
The story was stronger. The story carried it.
Yeah.
It's just Iron Man does not have an awful lot going on story-wise. It is 5 done-in-ones that Well, I still really enjoyed the second issue with the little group of people on the island who wanted to become better through the armor, and he had the one-on-one. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was probably the strongest of the bunch. But
and then this one, it's like, oh, here's yet another slightly morally corrupt business person that Tony Stark knew from his youth, who's taken hold of the extremists to do something that lasts 6 pages in the middle of. Yeah. A framing story that involves an awful lot of Pepper Potts looking disproportionately grumpy.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of teeth. So many teeth.
So many teeth.
So many teeth. The poor kid watching the moon landing. I mean, it's like...
God, his teeth!
Ah, the teeth! They're everywhere. So, anyway, I don't know. If you're not reading Iron Man right now, that's okay, but you might, you know, it's like, I'm really going to hope and hold out, you know, that the next... arc is going to be better. But there's one thing I got to give a quick mention for, which is Firestorm! Ha! Ah! Why? Why? You're like, why? Even I said this before the show. And Chris Triplett is like, why? I'm like, no other reason.
I didn't know. I was like, why are you still getting this book? I had to ask you.
Dan Jurgens is not only writing, but drawing it.
I forgot. Yeah. Like, I remember you talking about that. I'm sorry, I forgot. But, yeah. I was thinking, like, whoever was doing in the book before, it's like, why are you still getting this book?
Yeah. And this has been an interesting little, like, start arc, even though it's involved a villain that I know nothing about because it was from Captain Atom. But it involves the dude, like, taking over the Firestorm body and, you know, doing a bunch of stuff and ends up fighting Captain Atom in this. And it sets up apparently a story that's coming up in Legion Lost that involves Adim with a Y. But he's not Captain. He's a person. So, yeah. Anyway, very interesting. It set up a couple of, you know... It set up and then seems to have done away with you know, a group of enemies but for Firestorm. But hey, that's what Dan Jurgens is good at. He can throw baddies at you all... like year long, because they just pop out of his head. It's amazing. I love it so much. Even this cover, even the cover is like very retro because it's got like Firestorm in a skeletal form, and it's like death at the hands of Captain Atom. Like Captain Atom's behind him, like you know, yeah. It's awesome. Like I don't know why I love it, but it's like it's like watching a cheesy B movie or something. But it's good. Anyway, there you go. All right, Christopher Feely.
Yeah, okay, I got a couple bits and pieces. Nothing major again this week. I want to give Superman Family Adventures a quick nod because this is the latest issue to really prove that this is it's kind of stepping up from where Teen Titans was by the same, you know, the same creative team, in that this definitely does have an ongoing little plot at this point. Last issue, the Toyman unleashed this little robot beetle into the Fortress of Solitude, which was in evil colors, purple and green, and it had the Brainiac symbol on it, and we've seen the Brainiac symbol on Lex Luthor's armor before, and it sent a message off to a mysterious satellite, which in this issue summons, I had to go and look up who these guys were, this fire being, this ice being, and this lizard man who can turn invisible. It summons them down to Earth where they fight the Superman family in space, I should say. And these were the elemental beings from the first couple of issues of the New 52 Superman. I didn't know who they were, but that's who they were. Yeah,
I remember.
Imminently, but quite a lot of fun in this because you know they just get blasted off to the Phantom Zone. But they find the satellite and they think it's a piece of Krypton that it's Kryptonian technology, so they think it's been left over from the destruction of Krypton. And I'm like, it's in purple and green, guys. It's clearly evil. That's how the logic works in Tiny Titans. But it's also very sweet as well because Superman finds a Phantom Zone projector in this satellite and he uses it to send the elementals into the Phantom Zone, and he discovers recordings of his parents, and he's actually able to use... He discovers that Jor-El sent his mom into the Phantom Zone before the destruction of Krypton, so he's actually able to rescue his mom from the Phantom Zone. Superman gets his mom back and it's... But also, Brainiac is coming next issue because it's a plot. There's a plot going on. That's a book that I It's an odd one because it didn't really have to win me over because Tiny Titans, but it did kind of have to win me over because Tiny Titans.
Hey, McFeely, does the Superman in that book, does he have like lines in his costume? Is he New 52 Superman?
He is New 52 Superman in that he doesn't have trunks and the cape connects over the shoulders and he has red rims on his neck and wrists, but that's the height of it, you know. Oh yeah, no. I mean, the last issue of Tiny Titans was all joking about how Superman had given up his red trunks.
Yeah,
it does seem to be pitching itself just a tiny bit higher than Tiny Titans was. But I've really come to actually enjoy that a lot about the book because, Tiny Titans did go for the very young crowd, you know, and you know, people miserable farts like me could read it as well. But this one pitches itself just a little higher, with more action as well. It's surprisingly a very different book, and it's really proved itself, you know. So, but this was a particularly sweet issue this week, so I wanted to give it a quick.
You know what? It's probably going to be the best Superman book ever. So maybe I need a big book.
Yeah, well, after Action, it's certainly the only Superman book I'll be buying. Another new number one I checked out this week as well was, it's only a two-issue series, it's the Iron Man 3 Prelude from Marvel, which is a two-issue story. And I would probably have picked this up anyway, because it's only a two-issue thing anyway, and I picked up the prologue to the Avengers that they did last year. But where that was digital first stuff collected in print, I believe this is print first, and it's written by Christos Gage. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I picked it up. And it just fills in what happens between the end of Iron Man 2 and Avengers, broadly speaking. It follows up Iron Man 2 in that it's the... How long is it? It's a little after Iron Man 2. The damage to New York following the damage to the Stark Expo following the showdown at the end of Iron Man 2 is being repaired. Tony... builds a new sort of war machine armor for Rhodey, and it is essentially actually a Rhodey comic. It's Rhodey investigating the increasing activity of the Ten Rings around the world, and it shows him busy doing that, fighting Ten Rings gangsters and the technology they're using while Avengers is going on. I think it answers the question of where was War Machine during Avengers. It's like he's fighting terrorists in China or somewhere, and he gets a little ring in his ear, and it's like, it's not too much trouble. You think maybe you could hightail it to New York in the next 5 minutes? I'm in Asia. Oh, no, that's cool. That's probably nothing I can't handle.
It's awesome.
So I didn't even think about where War Machine was in Avengers. I didn't even consider that for some reason. I don't know why.
So it's just a little...
Because it's War Machine.
Like, you know...
Because you don't think about that.
That's the kind of little fun story it is. If you want to see the Marvel movieverse getting broadened a bit, it's fun to pick up. It's only a two-issue thing. Something I enjoy about these and the Avengers one is that broadly, because Marvel is producing these, and of course Marvel Studios is doing the films, these do essentially seem to really actually count for the movie timeline in a way that nothing else... by any comic company trying to tie into a film ever has.
Yeah, because they usually don't. They both
have, you know, they have a root creator in them, you know. And that's why Marvel really seemed to have given up on doing... they've given up a while now. But, you know, back in the day, you'd get adaptations of films, and they would try to cram 2.5 hours down into 48 pages, and it would be terrible. They stopped doing them, thank Christ. But they have actually started to do them again recently, except they're doing them after the fact. They did an Iron Man 1 adaptation a couple of years after Iron Man 1 came out. They, I believe, are doing an Iron Man 2 one soon. They are about to, or have just done, a Thor adaptation. I am assuming that they're doing these so that they can create a nice, a big trade paperback or omnibus-style package of the Marvel movieverse without having to rely on early scripts for films that are going to be full of incongruities like every adaptation ever made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can actually adapt from the finished film to create something that flows through properly. And, you know, it's like the prologue to the Avengers was all about introducing things like the destroyer weapon, or showing you what Hawkeye had been doing, or what Salvage was up to, and just filling in all these gaps that worked. And I remember there was an official timeline published. I think Marvel released an official timeline that did incorporate that prelude, at the very least, that Avengers movie prelude. So it's the sort of thing that I think will... I don't think anything's ever done it as much as IDW's Dark of the Moon prologue comics did, but it'll hopefully help enrich my viewing experience of the films. Because those comics really did for the Transformers. They actively allowed me to enjoy Dark of the Moon more.
Wow.
I never read them. I didn't get around to reading them.
They were legitimately good and worthwhile. There was John Barber coming in and just storming all over Transformers and going, and I was going, give this man some G1 comics to write. And I was like, oh, look what happened. Look what happened by accident.
You know, I never buy any movie adaptations of comics. The only one I ever bought was the Michael Keaton Batman adaptation years ago. And it still amazes me how much the art made it look like Michael Keaton. It was kind of ridiculous.
Wow. You know?
It's like most
totally different video. Ending, too. It ended totally different than the movie.
Really?
Like, you're talking about, yeah. Like, he fell with the Joker when they fell off the building. He fell with him, and somehow he survived. And, like, there's this scene of, like, Michael Keaton without the cowl on running away so the cops don't catch him.
God.
It is awesome. Yeah. I mean, most like adaptation comics that have to rely on, frankly, even ones that do it after the fact, they're pretty much universally terrible because they're not given the page count that requires. IDW is definitely the company that's got the closest to it by giving it 4 full issues a piece. But even then, when you're talking post two hours plus films, it's still not enough.
Yeah.
And they've been. IDW has probably still done some of the best or least terrible movie adaptation comics I've ever read, purely because they give them the page space to at least let some parts of the story breathe. And Dark of the Moon was probably one of the best, again, because it actually... The prologue comics had this alternating Optimus Prime Megatron narration between their issues, and that schema actually continued into the adaptation, and the writer added a lot of scenes that he created himself whole cloth that weren't out of the script, which showed the fallout from things he'd come up with for the prologue miniseries. It wasn't just an adaptation of the movie, it really was like the movie within what IDW was doing, and it still had a completely different ending from the friggin' finished film.
Wow.
But cool. My definite pick of the week this week has got to be Manhattan Project number 8. It's a very straightforward, very delightfully bloody violent issue. But the main thrust of this one is that following the events of recent issues, the scientists of the American Manhattan Projects, which, as we know, is all the great scientists and thinkers of our time working together to find ways to better the world, have allied forces with Russia's Star City, which is the Russian answer to the Manhattan Project, and they have decided to become independent from their parent countries as a united force for science. Well, the Illuminati aren't very happy about that. So President Truman orders the FDRAI, the digitized brain of Roosevelt, which the Manhattan Project created, to stop them. So if you could then imagine a full issue of giant, clunky, steampunk Soviet cyborgs with televisions for heads all displaying FDR's face storming through two cities and Einstein in a wife beater with a huge gun and a big a bandolier feeding into it, shooting at them constantly, and Wernher von Braun with a laser in his cyborg arm. And Yuri Gagarin and his talking space dog Laika coming at them with shotguns, and a very straightforward 1950s sci-fi giant television screen with FDR's head on it representing the main brain of the computer, and everything unfolds as you would expect it to, but it's friggin' hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah, I say the same thing about
the
Manhattan
Project. Is that the end of it? Is that the end of Manhattan Project, or is it continues? Is it ongoing?
It is an ongoing. It's an ongoing series.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, because like I was gonna buy the trade or something, but if it's ongoing, I was like, wow, maybe I'm the too first, far gone now.
The first trade is out. Okay. So you should get that. I mean, I say the same thing about Manhattan Projects that I always said on the show about S.H.I.E.L.D., which was, how long do I give a comic that really doesn't seem to be doing anything except throwing insane ideas at me over and over again? You know, I need something more than that. And the first five or so issues of Manhattan Projects are very obviously setting up the cast style stories where you get introduced to Einstein, Oppenheimer, Feynman, Daglahan, Fermi, all these scientists. And you meet the FDRA and everything. And that's the first volume, is the first five issues in the meet the cast type stories. And you've got your scenario set up. And then the next two issues, 6 and 7, it really seemed like plot was starting whenever the Roswell aliens came back. and I'm not even going to tell you how that one turned out because it was fantastically bleak.
Wow.
And then... we've had hang on, this is issue 8. I can't even 6 and 7. I can't even get the count right in my head now. I don't remember how the that works out chronologically. Well, anyway, the last two issues have been about the Russian star city as well. And it's like, it does seem to actually be moving towards something because we're getting plot points that we've seen set up on other issues are recurring, and the team is not where it was now at the end of that introductory arc. So the thing is moving forward in a way S.H.I.E.L.D. never quite seemed to. Because S.H.I.E.L.D., whenever S.H.I.E.L.D. would take steps, they would always be really obfuscatory steps where you didn't know what was... Something was happening, but by Christ, it didn't make any sense because the story refused to give you the full picture of it. But then S.H.I.E.L.D. would go something, Archimedes piloting the Colossus of Rhodes as a robot to fight a Kree sentry. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll get that. Yeah, that'll be good. Okay, I'll stick on with this. Yeah, that'll be grand. You know, you would always convince me to keep coming back for the next one with something completely insane. But Manhattan Project is managing a little more than that because things do progress. Like, there's a definite sense of forward motion. Werner von Braun's situation, shall we say, is just drastically changed by the end of this issue. We'll leave it at that. Pick up the issue yourself. It's pretty much impossible to tell where on earth the book could possibly be going, if it is truly going anywhere, but I'm just a sucker for the amount of insanity that it is putting on the page, and it's absolutely, this week, it's the thing I just had the most fun reading up of anything else. Werner von Braun had a cyborg laser in his arm that he used to shoot FDR's robot television head in half.
Well, I mean, it's not like it was a challenge this week either, though. But that does sound really awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, I reviewed Morbius. There wasn't much that came out this week.
Yeah, exactly. So, cool. Yeah, I picked up the first trade of S.H.I.E.L.D. The second one isn't out yet, is it?
No, because he didn't finish the second series. It got to 4 issues out of 6, and it's on hiatus right now.
Really? Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah, so there was the first 6-issue miniseries, there was the one shot that had the Archimedes piloting the
fast
thing.
Forward to 3 years later, and we're like, okay, finally the trade is out. So remember this thing that happened several years ago?
Yeah, and I mean, it dropped off. The last issue of S.H.I.E.L.D. that was published was a really interesting one as well, because it had, let's see, who was it again? It had Tony Stark and Reed Richards as dads traveling forward in time with Nikola Tesla. And apparently getting split, well, we saw 3 potential outcomes. Like, they were off through time, and we saw them appear in the present, past, and future simultaneously. And we had these 3 parallel things running in the issue, and it's like, that's just where we left it. It's like, we're still absolutely no clearer on what all that book was about. Where the Manhattan Project, it has a, you can point your finger at it and go, yeah, okay, I see what's going on here right now. What'll happen next issue? Holy yeah. God, even knows. But...
Well, speaking of Hickman,
yeah,
he's everywhere. Nice segue.
Let's move straight into the New Adventures, which, in typical Hickman style, is a little bit confusing and yet interesting as well. So I'm gonna probably go ahead and I'll just hand it over to Chris McFeely because I know very little, if anything, about Black Panther, and that seems to be the centerpiece, at least, of this issue. And you may be able to fill in better some of this Illuminati stuff, because fuck if I know
anything
about it.
I didn't read any of the Illuminati stuff, so yeah.
I have like an issue or two of some of it, but...
Well, the issue is called Memento Mori, or it seems to be anyway, because we get another title later, which is... Well, this arc is... first and foremost, what Hickman has done with the New Avengers, we've said it on the show before, is that he's actually given it a distinct purpose. And I think that is, like that had me on board anyway, regardless of whatever all happened in the issue, that had me on board. We previously had the Avengers in Avengers Tower doing Avengery things. We had Luke Cage's Avengers living in the mansion, doing Avengery things. And we had the Secret Avengers, who were supposed to be secret, but sure did seem to spend their time just doing ordinary Avengery things.
Yeah.
You know, there was really no distinction between what the remit of Cap's Avengers and Luke's Avengers actually was. They could both face any kind of threat. They were only Luke's Avengers because it's Bendis' pet team. And both teams, well, usually more the main team, the Cap team, would quite happily engage in secretive stuff where they had to fly under the radar whenever they were supposed to have a Black Ops Avengers team that was supposed to take care of problems like that. The remits for all three of them, they were just non-existent. They were completely muddled and ignored. So now we have, in Marvel now we have the Avengers being the actual Avengers book where they do all the avenging. The New Avengers has been turned into a book about the Illuminati, and Secret Avengers, as of, I believe, February, is getting turned into the Nick Fury Jr. and Agent Coulson book with guest stars.
Yes.
Three distinct remits that are going to distinguish each of these books, give them their own purpose, and it's just a really good... I'm just so thankful somebody did it. Somebody sat down, looked at the Avengers, and broke up the things and started giving everything a real purpose that was causing a problem. So this issue is about how a trio, it's set in Wakanda predominantly, in which three young Wakandans are on Wakanda confuses me. I've never been a big fan of the Black Panther or anything, so you know, this one was a bit of a hard sell for me, but they're essentially out trying to solve and find and do this sort of science, that weird blend of science, magic, and tribal culture that Wakanda has always been representative of. The Black Panther, who is not the king of Wakanda anymore, as we may recall from the a bit spins out of what Hickman was doing on Fantastic Four in his epilogue issues.
Yeah.
If you remember, there was one issue. It's like of all the stories that he did after the end of his story, they were nearly all epilogue type issues that tied up loose ends from throughout his run, and one or two that were just standalone stories. But there was one amongst them where the Fantastic Four went to Wakanda that mostly seemed to be set up for a new scenario for the Black Panther, where he abstains his throne, he gives it to the female Black Panther, Shuri, and he goes off to live in the necropolis, I think, below Wakanda or off in the jungles or wherever, where he's actually at the feet of the goddess, the panther goddess, who turned out to be Bast from Egyptian mythology and what have you. So anyway, this is the panther now is just kind of a guardian of the jungle and not the king anymore. And he finds these kids who have discovered this old blah blah blah. Anyway, tribal stuff, and they witness the arrival of some kind of peculiar alien mystical force. It's all a bit mysterious. They're speaking in Sumerian. They claim to have come back to the Earth from times long past. They hunt and kill the three Wakandan youths, and the Panther has to call the Illuminati in to get some help. That's the long and the short of the issue.
Yeah.
What?
yeah. No, as someone who is a little more familiar with more of Hickman's Marvel works, there are some seeds here that I'm picking up on now. For instance, the aliens, whoever or whatever they are, I don't remember if this lead female character gets a name anyway. I don't remember.
She was called. It was like in the very first part of it. Yeah, she called herself the Black something, rather.
She was a Black Swan.
Oh, a Black Swan. Okay.
she has amongst her ranks some kind of... He appears to be... Actually, I don't even really see if we get the idea of what he is or not. He's wearing on his chest the same symbol as Eden Facy from Secret Warriors, who was a teleporter. She calls him her Manifold. That's Eden's new code name in Avengers. And she kills him in the course of the story. He's made some sort of agreement with them. She kills him. She kills him.
Yeah.
And he uses the phrase, "I escape only to be murdered here in this Eden." So something going on there. Hickman working with the past cast. I mean, let's be honest here. Now, I don't remember if you guys read Secret Warriors or not. Eden Facy, I literally only remember because he has a stupid name. He was the team teleporter on Secret Warriors, and the most significant contribution he made to the entirety of Secret Warriors 27 issues was getting knocked out in one of them so that they couldn't teleport somewhere.
Oh, God.
That was the sum total of anything memorable that character did within the pages of Secret Warriors. So the fact that Hickman has brought him back for Avengers says to me there's something cooking here, and what we see going on here as well, you know, there's something going on, and it's got me intrigued. It's a very straightforward first issue otherwise. Black Panther and some red shirts meet some aliens. Red shirts die to prove the threat of the aliens. Aliens say very mysterious things. Black Panther recognizes their threat. They seem to be existing outside of normal space-time. Like, there's a field that's hiding them, and there's
a planet.
A planet in the sky above them that's invisible on the other side of this field. So Panther is kind of worried. So he's calling in the Illuminati. Last page shocker, you know, that's the remake of the book. We know it's the Illuminati.
And that's a big deal, too, because he didn't want to have anything to do with the Illuminati at the first part of the book.
Yeah, we didn't touch on that part, the Illuminati part.
There's a previously in New Avengers page at the very start of the book here, which shows it's not actually lifted from the original comic in which it appeared. I think that was the first issue of Bendis' New Avengers Illuminati miniseries, in which we saw the Black Panther say no when he was asked to join. I mean, I think the dialogue is lifted straight from it there, but the narrative captions are new.
Do you want to explain that for the people that aren't aware of the Illuminati? That's been a kind of a dead concept for a little while.
Yeah, that's been quiet for a while. Nobody has done anything with that. That's Reed Richards, Black Bolt, Iron Man, Namor, Doctor Strange, Professor X all voted to basically become like a small secret group who would help guide the direction of the superhuman community in their actions. They would run the world in secret, as the issue puts it. The Black Panther saw it as a bad idea. He was not wrong. This essentially rose up in... when did this really first get introduced?
This was the... Well, wasn't this the lead up for like Hulk? World War
Hulk?
Yeah,
that was it. But didn't it... It was something before that, wasn't it?
Civil War?
Was it introduced?
Was it in the prelude to Civil War?
I can't remember.
It might have been around Civil War, because I remember reading. I never read the mini series, but I remember reading like an actual Avengers comic or something that had this in it that led into it.
Secret Invasion dealt with it a lot, because we saw that the Avengers, the Illuminati, formed as a result of the Kree-Skrull War. That's when we saw that happen. But I don't know, I actually can't remember for the life of me when this was actually introduced, because it was a factor in Civil War. I think it was a factor in Civil War. I'm pretty damn sure
it was.
And
but the idea is that they go back to the 70s or something. If you're talking about the comics, like the actual times they
fought, right? It goes back to them, in terms of comic time. But
we just found out.
It was introduced in early Bendis stories, anyway. I don't think it was in the first or second, but maybe you're talking by the third or fourth. That's whenever it started to be introduced. Anyway, around then. They lost a member. I'm trying to remember who they lost. I mean, the team it collapsed essentially over the course of the last 4 years.
I'll say they lost Professor X.
Well, one of the major things that we found out they did was that they safeguarded the Infinity Gems.
Yes,
and I can't remember. They did lose a member because the most recent appearance by the team was in the second arc of Bendis's Heroic Age New Avengers, wherever the Hood came gunning for the Infinity Gems, and the Illuminati, their existence was in the open. Like, it was, that was it. They were blown. They were caught in the act, and they had to fess up to existing and to doing the things they did. And Captain America was particularly affronted by this, but in the course of the story, as he saw the real danger the Infinity Gems posed, he was invited into the group by Iron Man at the very end of it, and accepted that actually, yes, this was something that needed to be to safeguard the world. So hence Captain America's presence in this story as well, not the original members of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your history lesson. So as to the comic itself.
Mr. Fantastic page is also kind of interesting.
I do have at the start, too. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, I don't know. I do have to say that this whole comic felt like a nice warm blanket. as you know, Jonathan Hickton and Epting's art, like you know,
the art's great. I love the art in
the book. It's like, I know this world. I'm comfortable.
Because this was the
it's cool.
It's
cool because like they left Fantastic Four, and then like one of the first things you see is Reed Richards. So it's kind of like he's still writing Fantastic Four.
A little bit. Yeah.
I feel it's quite plausible we could see each of the first couple of issues open with a single page like this of each of the Illuminati saying something cryptic. I'm guessing, and this is just a guess, I mean, I'm guessing that this is their reaction to what they've discovered.
Yeah.
And Reed is complacent in the notion that sooner or later life ends.
Yeah.
And, whatever has prompted him to...
Which does seem kind of... Does that seem kind of counter to his stance in... Fantastic Four, where he's
Not when he's casting it in such broad terms the way he is.
So.
Sun and galaxy and universe do end.
But I'm gonna travel through time and find a cure for myself and my family.
But I mean, if I can get in the way of that for as long as possible.
Yeah, sure. You know, one thing I want to talk about real quick is that they've really subtly, like, changed the Fantastic Four uniforms over the course of the Hickman run, and they're still kind of going with it.
Yeah, they're only subtly different now for the Fraction and Bagley run. And I think the thing that manages to sell it without it being promoted as a holy crap, look, new costumes, is the fact they've kept them black and white.
Yeah, they kept that changeover that happened, you know, during the switch from Fantastic Four, you know, into FF. And now just changed it to, like, the four. You know, it's gone back to the four now.
It's a four again.
But it's still, like,
the details are different as well, but they're still... I just really like that they were willing to keep them black and white. It's not like it's been around so long that it's an unassailable new look for the FF that you had to keep or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another case of the new Fantastic Four series just being very respectful of what Hickman did and not just tossing it out so that they can take things back to a more basic approach for the Fantastic Four. It really is just building upon what he did there.
Well, and I think too, though, I think it says something that it's like you said, there's so often that thing where it's like they change the costume and it's like, look what we did, look what we did. And they didn't do that with it. They didn't even really do that with the FF change. I mean, other than to say that, you know, they were the FF and not the Fantastic Four. So that was like all part and parcel. So, I don't know, it's kind
of interesting. They haven't really made much of a big deal out of any of the new costumes for the Marvel now, to be honest, aside from Captain America's suit-up sequence in Avengers number 1.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me, actually, do you remember there was the scene in Avengers number 1 where Tony Stark was talking to Cap, and he was asking him if he was having bad dreams or something, and he seemed to be dreaming or thinking about something that was going on with the Illuminati, so I'm assuming that's what's going on here,
too. Could be that, yeah.
Because, well, I mean, what you'll notice here is that on the last page, Cap is wearing his classic uniform. He's not wearing his Marvel Now outfit.
Correct. Yeah.
So this would fall before whatever's going on with Avengers number 1.
Yeah.
And it seems like big stuff is going to happen. Like, you know, I would have been fine, honestly, if like Avengers would have been like the Hickman big super universal changes book and that new Avengers just being smaller stories. But it's not. It's both of them looks like they're going to be huge stories, you know?
This is just the one with the smaller group of characters.
Yeah,
I mean, this is going to deal with different kinds of cosmic stories. You know, the Panther obviously looks upon this as something that needs to be kept on the down low, as one of those things that can only be trusted to the best of the best. I mean, the appearance, of course, of Namor is very surprising here because he is a public enemy number one in Wakanda after he flooded it and set it back centuries. Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured that people are still, like, hunting him, because, like, aren't people still hunting him and Emma Frost and... Or they were?
Yeah, should be.
I thought they were.
I mean, Namor, unfortunately, being a king, has diplomatic immunity, but Wakanda is probably not that bothered.
Yeah.
Shoot him. Yeah, so there's not a world to say about the events that actually take place within this first issue. It ticks all the boxes, absolutely. I mean, it's not just like it's just a setup issue or anything.
Oh,
you know,
no.
There's a lot going on here just beneath the surface, but it's very much the sort of story that just makes you hungry to see what happens next. You know, we get a lot of very patented Hickman cosmology stuff at the very start here, where we see these three young Wakandans and they're on their little, they're playing the games. I don't know if they're playing them or if they're actually, yes, they're doing some kind of Wakandan ritual called the games, which are, quote, designed to find this generation's potential makers. And, you know, they find this stone pillar, and they read the runes on it, which are, turn out to be a list of names of,
Is it planets bards, or something?
No, hang on, wait. It's a list of Wakandan bards who formulated the existence of a code that is within the oral history of Wakanda regarding its tradition and how its excellence has been passed down through generations and through blood, which is a clue for them to drip some blood on the stone. And then they drip some blood on the stone, and the stone opens up and projects a map of a
stellar cartography
of some far off solar system, which is essentially whoever made this, I don't know, but it's their way of saying like Wakanda's future lies in the stars. You know, Earth is where we must go and what we must do. I really like this point he makes here, which was that. Where is it? America has abandoned space. The East crawls when it could run. So Wakanda possesses the preeminent space program on Earth. I like that a lot. And it's like, their race is now dedicated to like going further and doing more than anyone ever has been. And it's like, oh no, but you three, you're dead. And then there's some aliens.
That's really interesting.
I know.
Until they just died, I thought, you know, this is going to be like the Black Panther and a bunch of kids going into space. I was like,
yeah,
that could be interesting.
Yeah. They really didn't read like red shirts, and that's a credit to the issue. You know, they did not read like a bunch of characters who were just here to be off. They were well sculpted.
No, when they died, I was actually surprised because, like,
good job. Like, yeah, wow. I mean, good job, Hickman, because those were
two of them died. And then I was like, oh, no, the Black Panther's going to have, like, a vengeful teen sidekick who's dedicated to us. Oh, he's dead, too.
Yeah, it was pretty well done for hive and die characters, you know?
Yeah, they did not stand out as that, so that's a definite sphere as well. And then this other hive and die manifold guy is obviously just a seed for something greater that's connected into a character Hickman's been already working with for a couple of years and is clearly ready to finally do more with.
Sweet.
So a lot of it is just... It makes you hungry for what's coming next. Not a bad issue in and of itself, but one that is definitely more in service to something bigger rather than a solid read in and of itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like it does what Morbius didn't. I know where this is going. I have an idea of its purpose. Morbius, I got no clue.
Yeah.
You there know? You go.
Yeah.
Key distinction.
Hey. So, cool. Very good. All right. Well, that's it.
Woo.
Then
that's a show.
That's a show that we did.
Yeah.
So don't
do it.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. It's kind of it's gonna be neat. So I'm excited. We got this. Is like it. This is the first step. You know, this is the first episode of the new year. Anything we read, you never know, could end up on next year's.
Yeah. Keep it all in mind. Don't think anything from this week will. But
I don't see it happening for this week.
I got like a dozen books next week, so that's a good start to a 5-week month. Yeah,
it is going to be a 5-week month.
Morbius is getting a best new series. I'm not going to give it best new series.
You don't think so? No?
Not yet. It'd have to be a really shitty year.
They'll change their mind. They're like, did we say series? We meant mini-series. Sorry, this is 4 issues.
Frankly, like, the Earth could explode tomorrow and New Avengers would still be the best new series.
Yeah.
Morbius still wouldn't be the best new series.
Yeah.
I don't know, I didn't even read it. There's no point in me ripping on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just because it's fun.
So. I mean, frankly, New Avengers isn't even the new series of this month I'm most looking forward to. Young Avengers, guys.
Oh, yeah, Superior that's right.
Spider-Man's next week.
Yes. Oh, it's going to be fun next
week. So, you know, hey, spoilers, that'll be top of the show next week.
Yeah, really. So. Big shock that would be. I'm excited. Awesome. So there you go. That's our show. Go to the website, tfradio.net. You can also check us out at fanboyversus.com. You can check us out live each week 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT. That is tfradio.net/live is where you want to go for that. Tell your friends about our show, please. Please. And then, like I said, if you want to, you can go to Bleeding Cool and check out the article thing that I posted, because, you know, I don't get anything for that, apparently. But it is something that I wrote that didn't end up on just this show. So,
also, you probably will be doing it if you listen to this show anyway, but I'm on Transformers Rewind with JD and Brian Kilby and the others for this month on the TF Radio Network. I normally get to podcast about Transformers comics. Been a while since I talked about a cartoon anywhere, and I actually really enjoyed the chance to watch some old Transformers. If it was given an excuse to watch some old Transformers cartoons with you. So we're talking Beast Wars, we're talking G1, we're talking Beast Machines, we're talking animated all through this month. So go listen to those. Yeah. They're fun to do.
Yeah, they are a lot of fun. You know, like I said, I mean, that's something that's always neat. It's like, if I had the time, I'd definitely try to get on board to do those. Especially when
they
do.
That's my favorite new segment you guys are doing, by the way.
It is. That's a really...
Yeah, I really like it.
That's become a really popular segment, actually. And I don't think that's by mistake. I mean, everybody loves the shows, and I think that's one of the things they like to hear us on that. So, I don't know. I don't know how we could do more like that. Maybe we could do other series or something, but... thank you.
I hear some Energon. When are you doing some Energon?
You know,
I
want to
see some Unicron Trilogy episodes.
The problem is when we keep picking those out, like, I love XV, don't get me wrong, but he was like, when he was picking the list, it was like, Stan, like, no, we will not do Unicron Trilogy. And Brian just doesn't know anything from it, so...
Yeah,
If you just
have to watch it before you do the review.
That would be more interesting, actually, because it would be a first-time experience, and you'd be like, what did I just watch?
Hey, I'll say here, you know, we love recommendations, comments. Leave a comment, leave a recommendation, send us an email, tweet it to us on our at TF Radio, Twitter. Let us know if there's something you want to see on TF Rewind, let us know. We run out of ideas, but there are hundreds of Transformers.
Nothing's
episodes.
Off limits. Japanese too, if you want it.
Exactly. Master Force, you know, Victory, any of that stuff.
Neo. I want to see some Beast Wars in Neo. Do it.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
just make sure it's
slightly more impossible.
Yeah, I mean, something we can get a hold of.
Something
YouTube,
that's available
fine.
In English language.
Something
even
that, yeah, even
words on the bottom of a screen.
Subtitles are fine.
I think something's got subtitled for Neo. There's some subs out there.
Maybe.
Yeah, there are like seven episodes.
Seven. It'd be nice. That would be nice. You know, that's something that should be done in this day. We should have full subs at least of everything, but.
That's right, man. TV Nihon's far too busy doing Power Rangers.
Oh. I wish they would be busy doing other things. But anyway, they should, not doing Transformers either. Anyway, I'm not a Nihon fan, I'm sorry. I don't know why that's such a...
What on earth are you talking about, JD-chan, you Honoré Yatsura?
Yeah, that. Okay, so on that note, again, follow us at TF Radio. Also, follow for this particular show at FanboyVS. You guys want to give your Twitters real quick? We haven't given those out in a while.
Yep, straightforward. Chris McFeely.
That's nice.
Man of the Town.
I hate you.
Still great. It's so great.
I was like, hey, I need to get on Twitter. What's my name? I don't know, Man of the Town. I just thought of it, and I was like, oh, it took it. Okay. I guess I'll go with that.
I think I hate you even more. Like, that story doesn't...
Every once in a while, you see somebody with a Twitter name that makes you go, oh, that's a great little Twitter name. And I was like, that is one of the best.
It is. And that story does not... The story does not make it any better. It does not soften the blow. It really doesn't. Like, because it's just like, whatever, Man of the Town. Okay, and I got it. Damn it. Meanwhile, I'm stuck with the pretentious The J.D. Church.
The J.D. Church?
Because I have still not...
Boy versus?
The J.D. Church from Bleeding Cool?
The J.D. Church?
The J.D. Church that posts on Bleeding Cool? Yeah. I'm going to go hang myself. Anyway, so... That J.D. Church takes up one more character than I want to use, so... You know, it's like I'm trying to keep the character count low. And some what bother, you know, here's the thing that really pisses me off is, and I've got a friend in the same situation where, like, her name is Susan Riley, and so someone has Susan Riley, so she can't use that. And I, there's someone that has JD Church, but they don't even tweet from it. They have like two people they're following, and no tweets. And I'm like, this sucks.
They would probably sell it to you.
They probably, well, that's exactly what it is. They would probably sell it to me. So I might have to send them a message and be like, "Can you please just give this to me?" So anyway, that's
DJ Church. You know, it's fair trade.
Yeah, that's what I need to do. It's like, dude, you could be the JD Church. I just want to be JD Church. What are you going to do? All right. Yeah. So that's our show. Thanks so much for tuning in, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.